Hey everyone, in this episode of the Motorcycle Adjacent Podcast, we're going to talk about the update on my 2022 Yamaha MT-09 SP. We're going to talk about borrowing a motorcycle to attend a group ride, and we're going to talk about why I am shopping for a second bike. Stick around and check it out. Alright, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Walt, and I'd like to welcome you to episode 7 of the Motorcycle Adjacent Podcast. And to kick off this episode, we're going to talk about an update to my 2022 Yamaha MT-09 SP. If you're watching the video feed, you can see it's sitting behind me. It's back home in the motorcycle shed, but unfortunately, it's not fixed. So, when I left off, we were talking about how I ran into an issue where I damaged my rear caliper assembly, the rear brake caliper. I pulled the threads out of the assembly, and out of frustration, I took it over to the dealer, my local dealership, Art & Moto, and basically asked them to take care of it for me. So when I did that, there was some back and forth phone calls, and basically they told me that they were looking at 7 to 10 days before they could get the part in. Well, unfortunately, that turned into them not being able to get the part at all. They tried buying direct from Yamaha. I suppose they tried buying direct from Yamaha as well as other sources. And everywhere they tried to purchase a caliper assembly from, it all turned out to be backordered. And unfortunately, there was no ETA on the backordered item. So they called me, they broke the bad news, and I decided to give it a shot myself and see what I could source. So I hopped on Partzilla and I found the rear caliper assembly for a 2021 plus Yamaha MT-09 SP, or Yamaha MT-09, not necessarily an SP. And the price on it was about $100 less than what they were charging me. And Partzilla claimed that they would be shipping it in 2 to 3 days. So I placed the order and eagerly awaited. This was probably a Wednesday when this happened. So I placed the order on Wednesday. I'm like checking the order status to see if it's finished processing. Wednesday goes by. Thursday's here. The ship date went from expected to ship on Friday to expected to ship on Monday, which was disappointing. Then by Friday, the ship date was changed to no ETA available. So basically, I ordered a part that apparently Partzilla couldn't get their hands on. They charged my credit card prior to shipping and then kind of just changed the ship date on me, which was a little frustrating. So I decided to go ahead and cancel the order, which was kind of a, I don't want to say it was a process, but it was much more difficult than it needed to be. Apparently, if you want to cancel an order with Partzilla, you have to do it over the phone. Even though you can order the parts online, you can't cancel the parts online. So I had to call. Fortunately, I got right through. The guy on the other end of the line was nice. We got the order canceled in no time at all. But it kind of bugged me that I had to go through that step of picking up the phone in order to cancel my order. From that point, I felt like I was out of luck. I mean, I really didn't know what to do. I couldn't order an OEM part anywhere, and I really didn't want to go the route of upgrading the brakes. I did look into that briefly. Instead of just a rear Brembo brake would have set me back like $500. So I really didn't want to go down that path. So I did what I thought would be the next best thing. I went on eBay and I started looking for crashed bikes. You know, there's lots of them out there. Maybe someone wrecked their 2021 plus Yamaha MT-09 and they were parting it out. And I got really lucky. I found one brake caliper assembly for approximately $120. Unfortunately, the brake caliper was in the United Kingdom, and shipping on said brake caliper set me back another $62-ish. So all in, I'm at like $180-something for a used caliper, which hopefully arrives with no issues. Hopefully, whatever bike it came off of, all the damage was on the front end and there's nothing wrong with the caliper. I didn't see anything in the photos, but I am not a service tech. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed here. the biggest downside of ordering it this way, aside from paying as much as I would have for a brand new part, is that it's going to take 3 weeks to get here. And that creates kind of a massive problem with the riding season, especially since, you know, we're in October at this point. There's not a whole lot of comfortable riding left in the year. And I really don't want to be down for an extended period of time. But I don't really have much of a choice. I decided to order the part. I'm kind of in limbo waiting for it. My bike was over at the dealership. They have a, or at least they advertise online or on their invoices that if a bike's not picked up within 10 days, they start charging you a storage fee for it. Now, I realized that they had ordered my part and I probably could have flown under the radar given that I was waiting for a part, and they probably wouldn't have charged me to hold onto my bike, but I was frustrated. I wanted to get the bike home, and I had several people recommend a potential fix that I desperately wanted to try. So I had Martin deliver the bike. I got it home, and I proceeded to get my hands on a helicoil kit, which is basically, it's a thread repair kit made out of a wire that you take the existing hole, you ream it out to a larger size, then you tap it, and then you insert this, effectively, what is a spring into the hole. And then when you put the bolt in, it expands, kind of bites into the material, and you have a thread repair. So I had talked about having the shop do this for me. Unfortunately, they didn't want the liability because it's the braking system. I can understand their concern with not wanting to jury rig it, you know, but I didn't want to be without a bike for an extended period of time. So I opted to give it a shot. I talked to a number of people. All of them said they didn't foresee any issues with it. So I got myself a helicoil kit. I drilled out that hole, which was tremendously hard. Now, when I talked to the guy, or the service manager, about this potential idea, he was telling me that the material is extremely hard. And with how easy I pulled the threads out, because I was cranking down on that bolt pretty hard, but with as easy as I pulled the threads out of the caliper assembly, I really expected the metal to be kind of soft, but it wasn't. It was a bear to drill it. And then the tapping process was even harder. I wound up doing it with my dad, and we stripped the tap handle. Like, it took so much force to turn the tap inside of this hard material. Now, don't get me wrong, the tap handle, it's not like it was solid steel or anything. But we wound up twisting the tap handles right off the tap and had to use a wrench. And it was a lot of fighting and a lot of oil, you know, lubricant to try to get this thing through. Eventually, it went through. We were able to tap the hole, insert the threads. And that's kind of where we ran into some issues. When I purchased the helicoil kit, I told the guy at the auto parts store that I had never used one of these things before. And I said, you know, how exactly does it work? Do I need to put some red thread locker on the helicoil? Does it kind of bind in there? You know, what happens? He said, well, you know, when the bolt goes in, it kind of expands. It causes the material to bite into the metal that you've just re-threaded. And he said it's kind of like a hot topic. Some guys recommend putting a little permanent Loctite on it. Some guys say don't. He said personally he does, so I picked up a little tube of red Loctite, and that was the plan. So we drilled out the hole, we tapped the hole, we inserted the helicoil kit, and then I think the part where the helicoil is supposed to bite into the surrounding material is where everything went wrong, because it felt like the hole was too small. Like the threads were really binding, and you know, we started the bolt a little bit and you could feel it bite and bind, take, you know, back the bolt back out, and you could see the damage to the threads on the bolt. And basically it came down to this bolt will go into the hole and we can lock down this caliper. However, in doing so, we're going to ruin the bolt. The bolt will hold, but when the bolt comes out, it's probably not going to go back in again. So kind of crossed our fingers, torqued down on the bolt. And once that was done, everything was locked down in place. I hit the brake pedal to check it, and I had no brake pressure. So one of the issues with this bike that's actually kind of common is the caliper bolt has a pin on the end of it where the caliper slides over top of the pin. And apparently it's a common problem with Yamahas that if that bolt gets twisted just a little bit when you're tightening all this stuff down, it's really easy to bend that bolt. And if the bolt gets bent, now the caliper doesn't travel correctly, and it won't bite into the rotor. And apparently that's what I've got going on. And like I said, I got the bolt in, but when I take it back out, it's going to be toast. So that's where we're at. The bike is sitting here. I don't want to mess around with it anymore. I did order a replacement bolt, which will probably be here before the caliper assembly. But even if it comes in, I'm just not going to screw around with it. I'll wait, and then I'll just have the dealership take care of it as soon as the new part comes in. Hopefully, they aren't flooded with work over there, and their delivery guy can come get it, because when it's out of regular riding season from October until, I don't know what the cutoff is, they do pickups and deliveries for free on services. So fingers crossed that once the part comes in, they can get me in quick, pick up the bike quickly, and get me back on the road again. Because at this point, it's been a couple of weeks, and I'm really, really missing riding my motorcycle. So in the last episode of the Motorcycle Adjacent podcast, you know, when I was wrapping up the whole story about my MT-09, and one of the real downsides to me personally was that I was going to miss the Bucks County covered bridge ride with the guys from Discord. I was pretty bummed out. And I did explore some options. So my bike was down, unable to ride. I went on to Twisted Road, and I believe it was Rideshare. There was like a motorcycle division of this, you know, car rental place. And I started looking around to see what my options were. And some of the bikes were kind of expensive, and some of the bikes seemed like they were priced just right. And there were one or two that were relatively close by that would have worked out. You know, the price was right. The proximity to the bike was not too far. And I was kind of interested. There was actually it was either a 2018 or a 2020 BMW 310 GS. Kind of a little bike, but I was kind of interested in it. I really wanted to check it out. And I think the price on that bike was about $85 a day. So in my mind, $85 to go ride with my friends is kind of steep, but what the hell? You know, you only live once. So I started looking into this bike rental process and quickly discovered that it becomes a bit more expensive than that price tag leads you to believe. So, you know, you've got $85 a day. That's the base rental price. And then there's another $15 rental fee that Twisted Road charges you on top of that. So now you're up to $100. And then there's separate insurance, and there's tiers. So if you want like the bargain basement insurance, it's X dollars. If you want the recommended level of insurance, it's Y dollars. And if you want the premium, it's Z dollars. And the prices vary. And then, you know, as I read on a little bit more, I found out that the rider is 100% responsible for the tires. So if you run over a nail and you get a flat, you're on the hook for replacing that tire. And I would imagine that a plug is not acceptable as a repair. I mean, if it were my bike and I was loaning it out and someone picked up a nail, I would want the tire replaced, not plugged. So, you know, the tire insurance, the tire specific insurance, which is different from the damage insurance, was another fee on top of that. And I started looking at all of this stuff kind of stacked up on top of stuff. I just didn't want to drop that much money to tinker around on a BMW 310 GS. As much fun as it seemed, I just didn't want to do it. And then some of the other bikes that caught my eye, there was a Honda CBR 600 RR. up in the Reading area, and I believe that was about $100 a day. And then there were a couple of other bikes that were a little more my speed. There was the someone out toward the Lancaster area had like a Tracer GT9, which would have been a lot of fun to ride. I mean, very similar to my MT09. But, you know, again, all these prices kept rising. The bigger the bike, the bigger the dollars. And the BMW 310 GS was kind of the bargain basement. And that was the one that caught my eye. That was the one that I was interested in. But, you know, you start stacking on those fees, and I just didn't want to do it. So I did the next best thing. I started reaching out to family. My father-in-law has three motorcycles that I could have borrowed. Probably could have borrowed any one of them. However, all three of his bikes are massive, and they're kind of intimidating. I always have ridden standards. I mean, my MT09 is like 430 pounds. He's got a 2005 Goldwing. He's got a 2014 Harley-Davidson Ultra, and he's got a brand new 2022 Street Glide. I mean, all of these bikes are much, 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 much bigger than I'm accustomed to from a weight perspective. And one of the Goldwing is sentimental. He's had it since he bought it new in 2005, and he and his wife have ridden all over on it. So I would hate to have some accidental damage happen to that. The Street Glide he bought brand new just recently, so I obviously don't really want to touch that, and I can't afford the damage on that. And then the Ultra, it's just a kind of a bike that I guess he picked up to tinker with and is actually kind of fallen in love with. It's a couple years old, but it's probably the biggest of the three, I would imagine. It certainly looks like the biggest of the three. And yeah, again, you know, all three of these bikes are much more weight than I'm accustomed to. And I just wasn't real comfortable with the idea of being out on one of these big bikes for a prolonged period of time. So that idea went by the wayside. My last ditch effort was to reach out to my brother. He's got a Yamaha V-Star, and I wasn't even sure if he still had it. I mean, the last time I talked to him about motorcycles, he said that he was putting it up for sale just because he didn't ride it much and he wanted something. He wasn't even sure if he wanted another motorcycle. So I wasn't even sure if he had it anymore. Due to some unforeseen circumstances, I wasn't able to get a hold of him to borrow that bike. And so it looked like I wasn't going to be able to attend the ride at all. And then, out of the blue, I got a text message from Steve the day before the ride saying, "Hey, my wife is under the weather. She's not going to be able to attend the event. And, you know, we know that you want to go. She says you're more than welcome to use her 2017 Honda CBR 300 to attend." And I jumped on the opportunity. For one, it sounds like a fun little bike to tinker around on. Nice and light. Underpowered, but it would be a lot of fun. And two, I get to go and hang out with my friends. I don't miss out. And I was really excited about that. So I took them up on the offer, went over, and I hopped on that little Honda CBR 300. So after I met up with Untamed Ride and hopped on the Honda, we started making our way over to the South Perkasie Covered Bridge, which is where the group ride meetup place was. And it's just such a stark comparison. Usually when we ride together, he's on his Aprilia RS660, I'm on my MT09. If he takes off, I can keep up. It's really not a big deal. But he took off, and I tried to keep up on this Honda, this little 300, and I didn't have a prayer. I just had that thing pinned wide open, and it was just brrr, just puttering right along. But it was so much fun riding that bike. I showed up to the event, surprised the guys, which was really cool. You know, of course, there were jokes about the raw power of the loner 300 that I had. And the jokes continued the first time we stopped, got off the bikes, and chatted at one of our rest stops. And I said, "You know, you guys are laughing. You all think that you're out on this slow, easygoing cruise. But I'm back here feeling like Valentino Rossi. I've got this bike I got the engine screaming. I'm leaning into turns. It is an absolute blast. And it really was. The interesting thing about riding a 300 is you realize really quickly how much you take a bigger bike for granted. So, for instance, if you're going down a road on the MT-09 and you see a bend, you slow down, take the bend, and then you accelerate. Now, even if you're in a gear too high, so if you should be in second and you're in third, it doesn't matter. You slow down, you go around the bend, you twist the throttle, and the bike goes. It accelerates. You could even be in fourth gear, come around that bend, and twist the throttle, and it will accelerate. It's just got loads of torque, and the bike goes. Unless you're like obnoxiously high and in sixth gear when you should be in second, the bike goes, and the bike doesn't really struggle. So you get used to that. You get accustomed to just being able to roll into a corner and accelerate out of it and just be all willy-nilly with whatever gear you're in. But with a 300, you don't have that luxury. If you slow down too much approaching the corner, you will have no power getting back out of it. And you wind up downshifting and making the engine scream, and you're just kind of puttering along. And, you know, you have to carry speed into the corners. You have to, you know, carry speed if you want to continue going at a fun pace. So it was a real eye-opener in terms of a different riding style, and I absolutely loved it. I had a fantastic time on that Honda CBR 300, and I do not regret riding it one single bit. You know, there was a joke, you know, oh, you can borrow the bike, but you can't make fun of it. I love the bike. It was such a fun change of pace. I would absolutely hop on that bike and ride it again. It was just fun. I had some trouble keeping up with some of the guys, but, you know, they're all on much bigger bikes. But so what? You know, you ride your own ride, have fun. That's exactly what we did. It wasn't a big deal that I was lagging behind a bit at times. It was fun. And I appreciate you guys, Steve and Steve's wife, for loaning me that Honda. It was a blast. It was a lot of fun, and I had a great time attending the group ride with the guys. So, you know, it occurs to me I should probably tell you a little bit about the covered bridge ride. So this is actually the second time we've done it. The first time was early in the spring, and a handful of us went from... We started at the South Percussie Covered Bridge and wound through Bucks County, hitting... I want to say that there are 12 bridges in the county, and I think we rode to 9 of the 12. And then we stopped at Van Sant Airport for lunch, which was amazing, with planes taking off, gliders in the air, several dozen bikes were lined along the runway, just guys hanging out, taking in the sights. It's a really cool biker hangout that I was never aware of. And we stopped there again this time. Wasn't nearly as crowded. Again, late in the season. But this time, it wasn't as frequent with stops. We cruised through a lot of these bridges just to keep moving. You know, we were limited daylight. It was a bit cooler. So, you know, we didn't want to stop and have these long, drawn-out conversations at the various stops like we did the first time around. But I still had a great time. It's beautiful riding through Bucks County, and it's really cool seeing these old, historic covered bridges. I really look forward to doing it again, maybe 2023. I don't know, Pat, what do you think? Do it once, do it twice, change the county and go somewhere else since we've already done this one twice. Whatever we decide to do, I look forward to it because I really enjoy riding with these guys. They're a lot of fun and it's loads of laughs, fantastic scenery, and the comms chatter is fantastic. It's great, and I look forward to doing more of it. So I've been in the motorcycle community in YouTube for about 2 years now, and I've met some amazing people, both online and in person, had lots of laughs, learned tons and tons of stuff about motorcycles and motorcycle culture, and I think that there's a wonderful community there that I really enjoy being a part of. And I'm a believer in, and what is that old saying, a rising tide lifts all boats, where instead of kind of nettling one another and backbiting, we should be supporting one another. I think it's important for community, and it's something that I enjoy doing on my channel and now on my podcast. And this week, I'm going to talk about a video I saw from a friend, Chopper Fett. So I was scrolling through the YouTube suggestions just a few days ago when a thumbnail caught my eye. It was Chopper Fett, in effect, saying that the Insta 360 One X just wasn't for him, and he was going to ditch the camera. Now, this is kind of an unpopular opinion, because 360 cameras seem to be all the rage. Lots of people use them, lots of people overuse them, and you feel like you're getting motion sickness watching these things zip and flip and go all around. But, you know, there are lots of channels either have them and use them or strive to get them and use them. And it was kind of different seeing a motovlogger that I respect come out and say, I've got a 360 camera and it's not for me. I'm going to ditch it, because I've been feeling the same way. So I watched the video from Chopper Fett, and he makes some wonderful points about a variety of things. You've got resolution issues, where the camera is advertised as being a 5.7K camera. And that sounds wonderful. You know, most GoPros are 4K. So 5K must be better, 5.7K must be better, except for that 5.7K is spread out over both of the lenses in the 360 sphere. So when you start overlaying 360 footage with 4K GoPro footage, you start to notice a quality difference. The 360 footage looks a little fuzzy. It looks a little... The depth of field is different, so, or the field of view is different, so just things look a bit different. They are not, they do not make a good side-by-side comparison. And when you start mixing 360 footage with fixed position GoPro footage, you start to really notice that difference. So he makes a wonderful point there. He talks about some sound issues. He talks about the workflow issues, and what it comes down to, I hate the workflow of the 360 camera. It effectively doubles the work. You know, you've got this amazing camera that does all these crazy things. Basically, if you are holding it out, it doesn't matter what you're pointing it at, it sees it, as long as it's in line of sight. It's obviously not going to see through me and look at the wall behind me. But if I'm holding it here, it's recording everything. The ceiling, the floor, over here, over there. You know, it's capturing all these things that a GoPro doesn't have a chance to do unless you're physically moving the thing around. And for that, it's amazing. It catches fantastic scenery. It gets those moments that you kind of whiz by on the side of the road. You know, all of a sudden something goes by, you wanted to see it, you couldn't turn your head fast enough to make the GoPro see it, so the 360 catches it. And for that sort of thing, it's great. But the problem is you've got to edit all of those tilts and pans and camera movement ahead of time, and it has to be done before you start processing your video. So you almost need to plan ahead, make all your movements, export the video, and then start putting it together. And if it didn't move when it really needed to, you need to go back and edit and re-export. And it's I don't want to say it's a workflow nightmare, but unless you're able to do it within your editing suite, it's a lot of extra work. So if you are a content creator and you are on the fence about getting a 360 camera, I would suggest you check out Chopper Fett's video. He makes some wonderful points, and he might just change your mind. All right, folks, we're coming down the home stretch. And the last topic I want to talk about is buying a second motorcycle. So I've actually been toying around with the idea of getting a secondary motorcycle for quite some time now. It started off as wanting to buy, you know, an 80s Honda CB to tinker with, something that I didn't really care if it didn't run, not necessarily. You know, obviously I want it to run when I want to ride it, but if it took a little extra TLC and it was a little finicky, like, that was okay, because it was going to be a second bike, and it was going to be a bike that I could kind of learn to tinker on, you know, learn the mechanics of motorcycles. So originally, that's kind of what I was looking for. And then things got crazy. Used bike prices shot up like a rocket. And suddenly, anything that was pre-owned became high demand and excessively expensive. Now, eventually, the idea of getting an older Honda kind of faded from my mind, not because I didn't want one, but because I wanted something a little more reliable, especially when I ran into issues with the Yamaha MT-09. Right now, I feel like I'm at the mercy of the parts department at Yamaha, and I just am unable to ride until I can get a part to fix my bike. And with as much trouble as Yamaha was having fulfilling motorcycle orders, God knows how long it's going to take to get an OEM brake caliper. So having my primary ride down has kind of accelerated this whole let's get a second motorcycle thing. Floated the idea past my wife. She was down for it. So I started looking. Now, when I was looking before, you know, kind of window shopping last year, before I picked up the MT-09, used bike prices were crazy. They were downright obscene. And over the last couple of months, it looked like they were starting to come down a little bit. So I thought, all right, well, now might be a better time to purchase a used bike. So I started looking around, and it's crazy. I'll give you an extreme example. So I'm on Facebook Marketplace, right? And I'm scrolling along, and I see an ad for a Kawasaki Ninja. So I click on it. And opens up an early 2000s Kawasaki Ninja 250. Let that sink in. An early 2000s Kawasaki Ninja 250. For $5,000. This guy wanted $5,000 for a 20-year-old Ninja with 10,000 plus miles on it. And it was a 250. By comparison, right now I could go over to the dealership and I could purchase a brand new 2023 Kawasaki Ninja 400 for $5,600. And for that extra $600, not only do I get a brand new bike, I also get a factory warranty, and I get ABS. Like, it's absurd. I mean, that is an extreme example of batshit crazy pricing, but it's there. So, you know, I abandoned the idea of buying a bike on Facebook Marketplace because the prices are just crazy. They're all over the place. And there seemed to be very few deals to be had. With that said, there was one motorcycle I was very interested in. It was a 2018 Suzuki GSX 750S, which is the Street Fighter version of the GSSX. It's Suzuki's naked bike, Suzuki's naked 750. And it was priced at $5,000. It was either $5,000 or $5,500, and the mileage on it was good too. It was like 6,000 miles or less. And the photos of the bike look fantastic. It looked like a winner. I was very interested. The problem was it was all the way out in West Virginia, which is a six-hour ride. So by the time I made arrangements to have it shipped, or I took the time off the work to go get it and either rent a trailer to trailer at home or get someone to take off work to ride out there with me or to give me a ride out there so I could ride at home, you know, we're right back up to I might as well just buy the bike locally because it's going to cost just as much. So, as I said, I abandoned the Facebook Marketplace idea and I started looking at bikes listed for sale through dealerships. You know, I tried locally. I tried Evolution Power Sports. I tried what's the other one, Scott Power Sports. I tried Reading Standard. Just a variety of local motorcycle dealerships, Blackman's, Martin Moto, and there were very few bikes that caught my eye. I mean, they were just all expensive. There was one bike at Martin that seemed promising. That seemed like it had potential. It was, I believe it was a 2014 Suzuki GSXF or GSX 650F. Now, the interesting thing about this particular bike is that it was a sales flop. It was basically a bandit dressed up like a Gixxer. So you had this economical bike dressed up like a sport bike. You know, it had the GSXR plastics and stuff on it. So it looked a lot more aggressive than it was. And it was presented as an economical option. And as such, I believe that is probably why it flopped. But it was only available for a couple of years. But it had full plastics, had a windscreen, and the price was right. I think it was like $3,500. So I went on a Cali Blue Book, and I did some cross-referencing. I looked up that bike in average condition in this area, and it spit out an expected retail price of like $3,700. So I thought, okay, Martin's selling it for $200 less than what Cali Blue Book is saying it's worth. It's promising. So I went back to the ad. I started taking a closer look at the pictures. You know, some rough, you know, had some cosmetic issues. And then I started reading through the sales information. And one of the things that they do over there is they list the things that the service department took care of. So, you know, they did a state inspection. I believe they fixed the fork. They replaced the fork seals, did an oil change. They replaced the left turn signal housing. They did a couple of other things. And the turn signal housing was kind of a red flag. Like, why would they need to change the turn signal housing? Like, I don't know, maybe was wheeling it past the door, like in my shed, and busted it off or cracked it or broke it. I don't know. You know, it doesn't look like there's any major damage in the photos, but I want to go check it out. So I go over there, and sure enough, I get there, and I look at where the turn signal was replaced, and there's a giant crack in the plastic. And I was like, all right. Now, all of a sudden, this bike seems really expensive for what it is. And I'm looking at it some more, and I go around to the other side, and there's a big scuff down the plastic. So not only was the bike dropped on one side, it was dropped on both sides. And suddenly, $200 less than what Cali Blue Book says it's worth seems like an awful lot of money. So that was a hard pass. Decided that one was out. So I started wandering around the dealership a little bit, and I came across a... I don't remember the year, 2018 maybe, Honda CB 500. It's 500F. Yeah, or maybe it was a CBR 500. It was definitely a CBR 500. It was a bit more than I wanted to pay. I think it was like north of $7,000. And so again, a little more than I wanted to spend, but seemed like an option. So I started taking a closer look at it, and sure enough, down the one side, there's scuffs. This bike was dropped too. I didn't even bother looking up the Cali Blue Book value to see what it was worth, because whatever Cali Blue Book said it was worth, it wasn't worth it to me. Not with scrapes down the side and the plastics. So I wound up leaving, coming home, looked around online a little bit, and almost gave up on the prospect of buying a used second bike. Or actually, I did give up on the prospect of buying a used second bike, which is why I put a deposit down on a 2023 motorcycle. But that is a story for episode 8 of the Motorcycle Adjacent podcast. So, how's that for a cliffhanger? All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me for episode 7 of the Motorcycle Adjacent podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, you could do me a huge favor and subscribe. You can subscribe on YouTube. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and Anchor. Yeah, I think I got them all. There's a lot of them. I'm also on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, even though I don't use it too much. That is such a massive time sink. You just dump so... It just kills so much time. It's very addictive. Fun app, but very addictive. So yeah, there are my social media sites. Again, subscribe if you're not already subscribed. I'd really appreciate it. If you're watching on YouTube, hit that thumbs up button. It lets me know that I am on the right track with creating content that you want to see. As always, ride safe, and I will catch you in the next one.